Cosa che, cosa che.
Riding with his fellow Cossack at his side, and you can feel the Cossack full of pride and passion's grace. On their way to glory, trusting in their faith to lead them on to victory and grace of God, believing freedom is a right that all men have to see. And fighting for what you believe in has to be. It's a right man have to see. So won't you fly, Cossack, try, Cossack, against those Turks and Tatars, go, Cossack, show, Cossack, that is where your heart is, be, Cossack, free, Cossack, lead us all to victory. God be with you, live, Cossack, love, Cossack, such a spirit must be free, Cossack, be, Cossack, freedom is for you and me, we are brothers for eternity. Cossack, against the Turks and Tatars, go, Cossack, show, Cossack, that is where your heart is, be, Cossack, free, Cossack, lead us all to victory. God be with you, live, Cossack, love, Cossack, such a spirit must be free, Cossack, be, Cossack, freedom is for you and me, we are brothers for eternity.
Now, the Cossack is just a story, but his legend lives on, of the glory what he lived and he died for, so no more he'd be a slave to another man. And if that Cossack has to die, then let him find his glory neath the skies, so you can hear of how and why he had to die that way. There was nothing as too high a price to pay. Of men today. So won't you fly, Cossack, try, Cossack, against those Turks and Tatars, go, Cossack, show, Cossack, that is where your heart is, be, Cossack, free, Cossack, lead us all to victory. God be with you, live, Cossack, love, Cossack, such a spirit must be free, Cossack, be, Cossack, freedom is for you and me, we are brothers for eternity.
And Shum from Winnipeg opens our program with The Legend of the Cossack, and that was a Ron Cahoot original composition, Fly, Cossack, Fly. Іти кем же вавом темпом розпочали нашу програму, вітаю вас всіх, шановні радіослухачі, на радіопередачу «Наш голос», говорить Павіна Макварі, дякую, що рішили перебути зі мною наступну годину. Hello there, and welcome to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. I'm Paulette Demchuk-McCorry, your host. I am just delighted to have you with me. Whether you're tuning in on AM, FM, or shortwave radio online or to the podcast, a very warm welcome to you, Vitayu. We have a great program lined up for you. We've got Sylvia Pietraziuk-Molnar coming by with a recipe for a yummy pasta dish. Keith is away this week at a radio convention in Pennsylvania. He's on the North American continent right about now. So there's no Ukraine News Outlook because he's busy with other things there. But Irina Bell will join us from the Ukrainian radio program in Ottawa, and she'll be sharing a Did You Know feature about some interesting Ukrainian connection to the Canadian Parliament buildings. As well, Marcia Skripik will be joining us to talk about her most recent novel, Making Bombs for Hitler. As well, our usual proverb of the week, other items of interest, and plenty of great Ukrainian music. And we do have a bit of a theme. This is March, and it is Shevchenko month. It is the month that we honor the great Ukrainian bard Taras Shevchenko. And there will be music dedicated to Shevchenko on all our programs in the month of March. Coming up now, we have the Ukrainians from Leeds, England, and this is from their very first CD and a classic Taras Shevchenko, Slava Kobzaria.
Вчитеся, брати мої, думайте, читайте, і чужому навчайтесь, свого не цюрайтесь, хто матір забуває, того Бог карає, чужі люди цураються. Хату не пускаю. Звоните, як чужі, і немає злому на всій землі безконечні веселого дому. Отаки ви прочитайте, що не самим снились, всі неправди, щоб розкрили. Високі ноги перед вашими очима, щоб ви розпитали мучеників, кого вколи, за що розпинали. От і ж, брати мої, нічого, брата, не хайна ти усміхнеться, заплакана мати, заплакана
Another classic Taras Shevchenko poem set to music, that was the Chuchman Sisters from Winnipeg, and that song was called Taka Yiyi Dolya, Such Is Her Fate. Up next is a group from Montreal, and this is not a Shevchenko song, although I think he would definitely approve of this sentiment. This is a group called Privit. It's actually a duo. It was when they recorded this, and they are again now. Last I talked to Roman, anyways. And this is from their first CD called Berech Nidi, Shores of Hope, and a song called simply Privit, or welcome.
Україна нам співає, під сонцем волі розцвітає, і світла доля нас чекає. Не
синьо-жовтий стяг палає.
Злоті, як буйно л'ється в волі спів, палає степу чистім злоті, і поле жде, чекає жнив. Моя відновлена країна вітає кожну доньку й сина. Заходять, сходять ясні зорі, ідуть далеко з граї хмар, а води чисті та прозорі пливуть, хлюпочуть повні чар. Моя відновлена країна вітає кожну доньку й сина, і всіх нас любо пригортає, нижним серцем нас єднає. Україна нас чекає, синьо-жовтий стяг палає. Моя відновлена країна вітає кожну доньку й сина.
Здається, все в природі всходні, співці про щастя ляскотять.
Моя відновлена країна вітає кожну доньку й сина, і всіх нас любо пригортає, ніжним серцем нас єднає.
Ukrainian Food Flair with Sylvia Molnar. Tips for Ukrainian cooking.
Hello. Forget what you used to hear about pasta being fattening. Pasta is becoming increasingly regarded as an excellent basic food, rich in complex carbohydrates, high in protein, and low in fat. The fattening part generally comes from high-fat sauces loaded with butter, cream, meat, or lots of oil. Ukrainians have interesting milk soups they serve with egg noodles or egg drops. North Americans have become accustomed to pasta with sauces. However, Ukrainians have a unique and almost lost pasta, which is low in fat and calories but simple to make and fun to eat. These soups are seasoned with salt and, if desired, with a small sprinkling of sugar. The amount of egg drops will depend on the desired thickness of the soup. For egg drops, just beat an egg and then beat in 1 tablespoon of water, 4 tablespoons of flour, and a pinch of salt. Pour slowly from the end of a spoon in a thin stream into simmering milk or soup, and let cook for 2 to 3 minutes. If poured from a height, the shape of the drops will be improved. It takes a little practice, but they are really fun to make. Try it. It's Ukrainian.
Thanks, Sylvia, for sharing your Ukrainian culinary expertise on Ukrainian Food Flair here on Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio. You're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio, broadcasting from Vancouver Island, Canada, for PCJ Radio.
Лихо мені з вами, нащо стали на папері сумними рядами.
Sonia from Nashville, Tennessee, from her CD Vid Shcheroho Serdetsya, From the Heart. And that was a Shevchenko poem as well, a rather put to a very contemporary sound. Again, I think he would approve of that. That was Dume Moi, My Thoughts. We're going to pick up the pace a little bit and bring you a song that might have been a sort of sound that would have been familiar in Shevchenko's time, or maybe even earlier. Here's Paris Dikeyev with Dance One.
This is Irina Bell, producer and host of the Ukrainian Hour on Chin Radio in Ottawa, with a Did You Know Chiznalivi segment, and special greetings to the listeners of Nash Holos. Did you know that the gold restoration on the weather vane and ironwork on the roof of the landmark Library of Parliament in Ottawa was done by artist Oleg Lisiuk of Toronto? He was the leading artist, assisted by Yulia Buta-Polishuk and Diana Milnichenko, both from Toronto. Oleg Lisiuk was born in 1959 in Lviv, Ukraine, and lives and creates in Canada since 1992. He is president of the Ukrainian Association of Visual Artists of Canada, vice president of the Ukrainian Canadian Art Foundation, and member of the National Artists Union of Ukraine and Sculpture Society of Canada. He has created several monuments, monumental signs, park sculptures, and memorial plaques in Ukraine, USA, Canada, France, and Great Britain, and has earned numerous awards and grants for his many projects. Oleg Lisiuk also did the logo and memorial plaque for the 120th anniversary of Ukrainian immigration to Canada. The logo consists of three parts. The bottom symbolizes the four waves of immigration to Canada. In the central part, people are transformed into cranes, flying to the new land with the memory of their national crest, the trizub. The third part transforms the wings of the cranes into a maple leaf. And the number 120 indicates the 120 years of settlement. A copy of the memorial plaque is now permanently displayed at the Canadian Parliament, the City Halls of Halifax, Montreal, Ottawa, Toronto, Winnipeg, Saskatoon, and Edmonton, as well as at the Embassy of Ukraine in Canada. You can see the 120th anniversary logo on the website of the Ukrainian Canadian Congress. And as for the gilding restoration on the roof of the Parliamentary Library in Ottawa, you can see that from quite a distance.
Дуже дякую, Ірино. Many thanks to Irina Bell of the Ukrainian radio program in Ottawa for sharing Chiznalive, Did You Know, with Nash Holos listeners. You can catch her show Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is, of course, 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, streaming live at www.chinradioottawa.com.
You can now hear programs from PCJ Radio while on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then during registration, hit the promo code box and enter PCJ to get automatically entered to win $100. For more information, go to www.pcjmedia.com and click on their Stitcher logo on the right menu. PCJ Radio on the go with Stitcher Smart Radio.
Line with me now is Ukrainian-Canadian author Marcia Skripik to talk about one of her most recent books called Making Bombs for Hitler. It is about a Ukrainian child who got caught up in the Nazi trap during World War II. And Marcia's here to tell us about her story and the process and all about her book, Making Bombs for Hitler. Marcia, thanks so much for joining us.
It's always a pleasure speaking with you and your listeners, Paula.
Now, Marcia, Making Bombs for Hitler is one is which book now? You've got so many out. What do you have a number on this book?
I think it's number 15. I'm not very good at arithmetic, but I'm pretty sure it's number 15.
Right, you're a words person, not a numbers person, right?
That's right.
So I've just read this book while I was away on vacation, and it's an amazing book. All your books are amazing, but this one. I was speechless. I mean, I couldn't put it down. It's not an easy topic to read about, and you said that it was one of the hardest for you to write.
It was very difficult to write, yes.
Wow.
Hard to write about something like this, about a really young girl. I mean, she wasn't even 9 years old when she was stolen from her family, and she's lost her entire family. Her mother was killed for trying to help save Jews, and her father was killed for the Soviets. And her sister is taken away, and the two girls are separated. and her younger sister was the subject of Stolen Child, which came out in 2010. And so this story is about the older girl, Lita, but still she's not that old. And most of the children who were stolen like that from their families in World War II, and many millions were taken in, from Poland and Ukraine, many of them were used for medical experiments or just sent directly to death camps. And this girl decided that she was going to try to make herself useful so that she could live. And this is what she did. And initially, the way that she made herself useful was she demonstrated that she was able to sew. And so she was assigned to work in a laundry for the Nazis. And she did that for quite a while, but it was her own good nature that became her downfall too. You know, her own generosity ended up giving her a worse job after that, as you know, because you read the book.
Mm-hmm. What prompted you to write this story?
I've always wanted to write about the slave laborers, the Osterbeiters, as they were known, and they were the Eastern workers. And it's something that has not been represented in literature at all. I mean, even in terms of personal memoirs, there are virtually none of them. And the reason is because so many of the Osterbeiters, the Eastern workers, died. They did not survive. And if you don't survive, then you can't tell your story.
Right.
So it's this huge hidden story. And, you know, I think it's bad enough to be killed for your nationality, but it's even worse to be killed and then no one cares, no one knows. And so I felt a personal responsibility to tell this story. And it's only been since the fall of the Soviet Union that people have felt comfortable enough who survived this to come forward, because, of course, there's a lot of misunderstanding. After the war, anyone who had worked for the Nazis by the, you know, the Soviets considered them Nazis. So if you were captured from your family and shoved into a boxcar and fed nothing but turnip soup and bread made out of sawdust, and then at the end of the war, if you were liberated, and then the Soviets considered you a Nazi. And so they repatriated millions of these people and either executed them as soon as they got them or sent them to quote-unquote re-education camps, which were Soviet concentration camps.
Good.
Where many more people died. And then if they didn't die, then they were brainwashed and thinking that they had indeed been Nazis, which they weren't. So even people who had, the few who had been able to escape to North America after all that, the only way that they could get here if they had been slave laborers would be to lie from where they came from, because if they were had been previous Soviet citizens, then they would be obliged to be repatriated because of the Yalta Agreement. So the only way that they could actually have freedom would be to lie where they came from. So then, you know, the fact that they lied, then they could be labeled a Nazi war criminal, right?
Right.
So these poor people who all that they did was happen to be born in the wrong place between two dictatorships and, you know, the labels that get thrown around and the racism and everything else. And so how could I not tell the story of these innocent people who have been caught up in the web of the most evil empires of the 20th century?
How, now these are really obscure stories, Marcia. I mean, who heard the word Osterbeiter, Lebensborn, all of these terms I heard first from you.
So,
I mean,
really?
Yeah, I didn't know about these things. I mean, I'm born in Canada. I'm second generation Canadian. My grandparents came over at the turn of the century when your grandfather came over.
Well,
right?
Same as me, yeah.
Yeah. And so all of my relatives came over then over 100 years ago. So I'm Canadian, really, although, I mean, in my heart, I've got great affection for my ancestral roots, which is why I'm doing Nag Holos and have written on Ukrainian topics as well, like you. But
mm-hmm.
No, these terms, Osterbeiter, Lebensborn, I'm as ignorant as the next North American about what went on in World War II. And
well, so was I. I mean, I didn't know any of this. And when I choose a topic to write about, it's not because I know about it, it's because I don't know about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the point in writing about something that I already know. I'd like to write about things that I want to find out about. I want to find out about those little bits of history that have been shoved under the carpet because they're politically uncomfortable for some people. If someone is hiding something, I want to know what it is and why.
Well, you have a good
and
way
to write a book about it.
Yeah, you sure do. Now, this one, the title, Making Bombs for Hitler, is very intriguing to me. Have you found, I mean, I read a review recently that said it might be off-putting for some people. Have you found that that's a problem?
Well, in fact, yes, I have. And the people who find it most objectionable are Ukrainians.
Really?
Yes, because say, well, why would we want to have any part of a book that's called that? Because we don't want, you know, we hated Hitler. And but, I mean, I think that it is such an in-based title that it makes people want to pick up the book. And I didn't know what to call this book. I had all sorts of different really lame titles for it. And a friend of mine who is a brilliant writer, her name is Kate Coombs, COOMBS, and she's a poet and a children's writer in the U.S. She came up with this name for me, and I think it's just brilliant because it just says everything. I mean, Making Bombs for Hitler? Well, how would someone get into that situation? Like,
yeah.
Obviously no one would want to be doing that.
Exactly.
But, you know, and so I, from kids, they're just totally mesmerized by the title. And I did a signing at the Ontario Library Association Super Conference the day after the book came out. And I had the signing was supposed to be an hour long. It was 2.5 hours long. So I
wow.
think that, and a lot of it was because of the buzz, because people were so curious about what the book could possibly be about.
Now,
because it is a topic that people don't know about.
Yeah, yeah. Now, it is a novel, but it's not an adult novel. It is, you mentioned kids just now, so it is a young adult novel aimed at what age group?
It's not a young adult novel. It's a children's novel.
It is a children's novel, okay.
It's a children's novel. I know that it's a really serious subject, but, you know, the thing is some subjects are so serious they can only be dealt with in children's fiction. That's a quote from Philip Pullman, wrote his Dark Materials trilogy, which is just brilliant. But it's true. There are some subjects that are so serious they can only be written in children's fiction.
Yeah, that's well said, because that is really the only way I think I could have read about this topic. I've read about the Holocaust, I've read about Holodomor, and I think I've reached a point with, what is it called, compassion fatigue. It's not that I don't
yes.
feel compassion, it's just I can't go there anymore. It's just too disheartening, it's too depressing. And
well, the thing about children's literature is when you write a book and it's marketed for children, the ending will be uplifting by definition, pretty much. And that's not true of other genres at all. And for me, I don't like to write about victims. I will never write about a victim. I will write about someone
survivor.
Who has stepped beyond that, who has transcended their circumstances.
Yeah.
I will also never write about someone being victimized and use that for titillation and pleasure. And that's the problem with adult literature, is that oftentimes these horrifying things are written in such a way to be light entertainment for adults. I'm not interested in that. What I want to do is to make my readers step inside the shoes or shoelessness of my character and to feel what it was like to be in that situation, because that's the only way that you can break away intolerance. There's no other genre that can do that. And even young adult fiction, oftentimes young adult fiction will have a dark ending,
mm-hmm.
but children's fiction does not. So that's why this had to be a children's novel, no other kind of novel. And if you think of the book, if you can think of the one book that had the most impact on you in your entire life, most people will choose a children's novel, whether it be Anne Frank or whether it be Black Beauty. It could be Little Women. It could be Oliver Twist, but it will always be something that is essentially a children's novel. Those are the ones that hit you in the gut and stay with you for the rest of your life and actually change the way you think about the world.
Yeah, yeah, you're so right. But you mentioned shoes or not shoes, and that's because,
yes.
of course, people in concentration camps, the prisoners there, most of them were barefoot, even in winter.
Well, and this was the interesting thing, too, because I had read a number of memoirs, and there would be, people with wooden clogs and various things on their feet. But then I did find a woman who was a slave laborer for 4 years, and it's who I dedicated the book to. Her name is Amelia. And she was actually from Western Ukraine, so she was treated better than the Osterbiters. She didn't even have to wear a label, you know. But she was a slave laborer for 4 years. And during those 4 years, she did not have shoes. And I said to her, but I've read memoirs and these people have had clogs. And she looked at me with such utter despair, and she said, I would have loved to have a pair of shoes. She said, but I didn't for 4 years. And so I felt that if she didn't and she was from Western Ukraine, how could I put a pair of shoes on a character from Eastern Ukraine who is treated even worse?
Yeah.
And Anilia herself, she's almost 90, and she can barely walk because, like, if you don't wear shoes for that length of time and you're in a Bavarian winter, you don't do well. I mean, you get all infections and everything else. And so to this day, she has been subjected to ongoing pain of what she, you know, suffered as a teenager.
Yeah.
And so as a tribute to her, I had to recreate what she was gone through. And my editor, I have to say, was really upset by that. She said, surely she would have had shoes. Put rags on her feet, something. And I said, but it wouldn't have been accurate. And so if you noticed, as you were reading the book, the character even goes through various things that she might cover up her feet, but it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't work in those circumstances.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, she finally does get shoes. But, you know, it's in a pretty gruesome way, and I don't, you know, I'll let the reader find out that way.
Yeah.
But again, it's the way that someone would get shoes in the circumstances. It's not like there was a shopping mall down the street.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. Yeah, very gripping novel. I'm curious about the picture on the cover, the little girl.
Well, you know, that picture and the cover itself was Scholastic designed that, and I didn't even see it until it was in the catalog. But the thing that is amazing about it is that girl looks just like my niece, Nicole. It could be her school picture. It looks so much like her.
Well, I looked at it and I thought, I wondered if it was yours, actually, because it could have been.
Well, it looks like me when I was a child as well, but it really looks like Nicole. I just, even where the part in her hair is, everything. Absolutely stunning when I saw it.
Must have sent shivers up your back.
It did, because, you know, you think of your own children, children that you know, children that you love, and you think of them having to go through these things that Lida had to go through in this novel. You don't want to think of that. It's bad enough for an adult to have to go through it.
Yeah. My heart was breaking as I read it, but yet it was an inspiring story because she was so driven by hope, by the will to survive and the will to find her sister and then the determination through all that. She kept holding on to that.
The other thing, too, is that her mother had always taught her that there was beauty in every situation.
Yeah, yeah.
That book. Something that my mother has taught me. You know, my mom has this phrase that she will use again and again, and it'll be the worst situation possible. And she would say, well, the good thing about that is.
Wow.
And my mother can always find a good thing about it. And I just felt that that was something that my Lida needed, is this feeling of hope, that there's always going to be something that she can find hopeful about whatever situation. And I think that for anyone to survive what she survived, she had to feel that way.
Yeah, yeah. You've taken these really, really troubling times of you know, people suffering, and you've managed, in the words of one reviewer, to take horrific topics in history, but depict them in a gentle and illuminating way.
Well, I mean, what they're living through is still horrific, but it's the reaction of the people who are living through it illuminating. And basically, I think what I try to do is to make the reader feel that they're that person. So what I'm doing is forcing the person not only to look right directly at her, but to feel like it would be to be that girl and to have all those challenges. You know, it's instead of looking at them from a distance and judging, you're stepping inside and walking in their shoes for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you can do that, then it just makes people more tolerant of differences and also appreciative of what they have but also, you know, really thankful that they were able to walk in someone else's shoes for a while, because then they understand that person a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, certainly that's how I felt. It's very inspiring, despite the sadness and my heart breaking for this little girl who was captured by the Nazis at age 8, and I think she was 11 when she was finally freed and able to to give away the ending. But
bad Paula.
Sorry. Yeah, hopefully that'll entice listeners to get a copy of the book, and all of the books, actually, because they're pretty much intertwined. I mean, all your books, one way or another, they are intertwined, and they are all uplifting and inspiring, even though some of them are children's books, like you say, picture books, and then this one, which is a children's novel, but still.
The readership for children's novels is probably about 50% adult in any case. Just because it's something as old as children's literature doesn't mean that that's the people who read it. You know, there's huge numbers of adults who read children's literature, and the reason is they know that quality is going to be there. And a lot of adult fiction, it's like, you know, you've got your literary fiction, and then you've got your commercial fiction. And a lot of the commercial fiction is written pretty much to throw away.
Yeah.
And so if someone wants to read something that is, they can read in a night or two, but is not throwaway literature, then they're much better off reading a children's book, because it will stick to them for the rest of their lives in many cases. But it's not going to take a huge time commitment. I prefer to read children's books myself for that reason, because like they're just so meaningful, but also short. It's a different format, and it hits you in a different part of the brain. I guess like you look at commercial fiction for adults more as candy, whereas, you know, this is meatier.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there was so much that I learned here. And certainly after reading your books, this one and Stolen Child, I consider myself, just from reading these rather than doing the amount of research that you did, that I know a lot more certainly than when I started out, and a lot more that people that haven't read those books.
The other thing, too, is that when, like, say, for example, if I had decided to write this novel as adult fiction,
mm-hmm.
I would have left a lot of in that people skip over. But when you're writing for kids, you have to be really careful to make sure that every single paragraph is written so tightly.
Yeah.
Like, kids have incredibly honed twit filters.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is, like I said, a wonderful book, and I recommend to anybody listening to this interview, if you haven't read this book or any of Marcia's books, definitely do start now. This book was Making Bombs for Hitler. It was published by Scholastic, and you can find it, as was Stolen Child, you can find these books and links to them on Marcia's website, which is Calla.com. That's Calla as in Lily, C-A-L-L-A. You can also go to the Nash Hollis website. There will be links there to where you can buy her book and find out more about Marcia and her writing. So thanks again, Marcia, for joining us and telling us about this, and good luck with your next novel.
Thank you so much, Paulette.
And if you'd like to read the fascinating story, Making Bombs for Hitler, you can go online to the Nash Hollis website, and there will be links there to where you can buy the book online. You can also find it at most major bookstores in the brick-and-mortar world. And also, you can check your library. Chances are it will be there. And if not, this is a good time to suggest to your local library to order a copy. March the 9th is Ukrainian Literature Day in Canada, and this is an annual event that was launched a couple of years back. And the intention of it, the purpose is to encourage people, members of the Ukrainian community and outside the community, to read a book on a Ukrainian theme, to learn a little bit more about the culture and history, and encourage their fellow Canadians to do the same. And I would encourage anybody listening to buy a book online or in a bookstore. Again, there'll be information on this particular book and others on the Nash Hollis website, the Nash Hollis blog. And also, you can check your library. Chances are there will be a copy there as well. And if not, this is a good opportunity to suggest to your library to purchase this book or any other on a Ukrainian theme.
He прийшла біда, невеличка надибала, чоловічка, де ж ти бідо узялась, що до мене вчепилась? Гей, біда, 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 біда. Сіла біда під мостом, їдуть люди з хворостом, біда воли нашугала, воли воза поламали. Гей, біда, 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 біда. Їхали старці обозом, та й знайшли біду під возом, били її палицями, не йди, бідо, за старцями. Гей, біда, 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 біда.
For the very best in Ukrainian programming, tune in to Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio, every Sunday evening at 6 p.m., AM 1320 on the radio dial in Vancouver and online at am1320.com. Elsewhere, Nash Holos airs on the PCJ Radio Network, AM, FM, and shortwave radio around the world. Online, you can find us at www.nashholos.com, on the Nash Holos page at www.pcjmedia.com, and on iTunes. And, of course, you can also sign up for the Stitcher app to listen to Nash Holos on your smartphone or other mobile device, and you can find links to Stitcher on the PCJ Media as well as the Nash Holos website. Нежами вже скінчила нашу програму. Пора нам прощатися на ще один тиждень. Але перед тим я хочу залишити вас такими словами мудрості. Якось так завжди буває, що коли мудрий ганить, то дурень хвалить. And our proverb of the week translates as, what the wise man criticizes, the fool always praises. And I guess that works vice versa as well. Well, that about wraps things up for another program here on Nash Holos. One last tune for you. It is by Prairie Crocus. It is called Back Up and Push. I'm Paulette Demchuk-McQuarrie. On behalf of all of us here at Nash Holos and PCJ Radio, thanks for listening. Until next time, до побачення.